Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the third ever episode of Generational Talent. Of course, this is the father-son podcast. Hell yes. Father-son podcast duo where we talk sports news, hot takes, gambling odds, everything that you might want from your sports podcasters.
You gambling degenerates.
Indeed they are.
And I love them.
We all do.
Yeah.
Nice. We've got an agenda here right in front of us. We tried to get in our friend to join us because he's a big MLB guy, but he was unavailable.
He'll be a guest host another day.
Yes. That being said, we're going to jump right in here. One of the biggest pieces of news that I saw pretty recently here, Devin Booker, two-year, $145 million extension. That is insane.
That's only $72.5 million a year. What are you talking about?
Absolutely insane. How do you feel about a deal like that?
Well, again, hard to really, you got to look at it two ways too. Don't get me wrong. I know the money's sick. It's crazy. It's the NBA. It's monopoly money, right? So you got to get past the fact that with the average person even get, you know, garner, hey, 2 years, $145 million? No, but you're talking about sports. So we'll put it in the context that it's in. I mean, it's insane, of course, but in terms of the NBA, I do think it's way overpaid. In the sense of what people are making, I don't have the comparisons in front of me, but I would say this, nothing against Devin Booker at all. Tommy, when's the last time Phoenix did anything?
Exactly. They make it to the playoffs consistently, which, again, that's fine. But if you're paying that much money, you're paying for a ring.
And don't you think you should make the playoffs when you got Durant with you at the whole time too? I mean, it wasn't like he was alone. So I'm one of those, you know, where does your leader and your team take you? Because in the same token, I look at the Hillgas kid, the Shea kid for Oklahoma City. He's not making that kind of money. That whole team is more of a team atmosphere. And I'm sorry, they won the championship. They may not have the appeal of a big name like a Devin Booker, but it depends. I mean, if you're looking to sell tickets, put butts in chairs, and to sell jerseys, sure, win championships. He hasn't proven that. So do I think he's worth that kind of money compared to these other guys? No, I do not. I don't think he is not worth your bang for your buck, and I think Phoenix way overreached.
Yeah, that's a fair point. In the world of the NFL, Tristan Wirfs, who is the Tampa Bay left tackle, absolute rock star left tackle, I might add.
One of the best.
Injury is going to keep him from starting the season this year. So without somebody to be looking after Baker Mayfield's left side, how do we feel like Tampa Bay might fare in this situation?
You know, I don't know the depth that they have at that position, but I would say hard to replace a guy who's a stud of studs. And I definitely got to believe that that's going to play into his head a little bit in terms of if I'm Baker, and Baker's awesome. I mean, I will give him credit. He's found a home there in Tampa.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, those blind sides, your backside, you are putting a lot of faith in those fellas on those teams. That's why those guys make the kind of money they make.
Yeah, I'm trying to see here. It's a knee injury. I don't know the specifics of it. All that I saw this morning was that it was going to keep him out for the beginning of the season. So, sure. Yeah, it doesn't look like we have any sort of like...
If I'm Baker, I'm looking at who am I playing in those first couple of games, because I think if it's anybody coming off the edge with any kind of a you know, stud, I wouldn't want Micah Parsons coming after me right there and there.
No.
So I think it could play into it. I don't think enough people give credit to how important the offensive lines are, because
it'll win you or lose you a game.
I think so. I mean, your quarterback and your running back are not nearly as effective when he has no time to throw and your back's got no holes to run through.
Yeah.
So I'm a firm believer. And they're the guys you don't know, right? You never know those names half the time. Mm-mm. You'll know the big names, but most of them, you wouldn't even know who the offensive linemen are, but they're the key.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. MLB draft is happening. Mm-hmm. First overall draft pick, the Nationals got shortstop Eli Willits. Angels, with the second pick, got right-handed pitcher Tyler Bremner. Mariners got left-handed pitcher Cade Anderson. Rockies, who are just the best in the league, got themselves a third baseman or shortstop in Ethan Holliday. And the Cardinals got left-handed pitcher Liam Doyle.
Yeah, I would say this. There is a lot of talk, and some of these players coming out are their sons now of other players. You're going to see even more coming into play.
You're going to talk about Holliday?
Holliday is wonderful. Yeah, okay, absolutely.
I was going to say.
Yep, and I like it. Makes me feel old, because I remember when the Griffies of the world were the kids making it in the leagues, and now you're starting to see a whole different aspect of it. I would say this. From what I understand, the number one pick in the draft, I do believe, was another young kid that basically they said is about the age Griffey was when he was drafted, because Griffey was drafted at, I think, 17 or 18. You know, you just don't see that very often. But to see all this talent coming through now and coming up the ranks that are all former kids. Manny Ramirez's kids in there. You've got a McGuire in there.
You got Vladdy Daddy Jr.
Yeah, who's already a stud in Toronto. My first, memory when it comes to, when I wasn't around when Ken Griffey, I was around, but I wasn't a ball player, you know, in the baseball. I was a teeny tiny lad, but when Ken Griffey Sr. was at his heyday, so I didn't really have a lot of reference point. I just remember the kid being my favorite player, right? And, oh yeah, your dad did play baseball, I guess. Now, it's a different story because you are starting to see, you know, when I hear these names, but my first one ever coming through where I just remember his dad real well was Cecil Fielder and Prince Fielder. Mm. When Prince Fielder hit the scene, I remember, you know, he wasn't as good as his dad, but he was way up there. But he was the first generation of them, and now I'm just seeing them all over the place.
I was going to say, you got, like we were saying, Ethan Holiday, son of Matt Holiday, and also brother Jackson Holiday was an MLB player as well, is an MLB player.
I don't remember Jackson so much, but Matt Holiday, of course.
And then Matt Holiday, the Colorado Rockies posted a picture of young Ethan when his dad played for the Rockies.
That's cool.
On the field, dressed in a full Colorado Rockies uniform with a caption, meant to be.
Yeah, meant to be, yeah. No, and his dad was a stud. So, I mean, I hope he, you know, different position, but I like it.
I would assume the Holiday family is very happy with how the MLB has treated them over the years.
I would think so.
Any other bits of news before we jump into what is a very stacked up second segment?
So, well, you know, you were speaking of baseball. One thing I do want to say is it's tracking to see, but we'll see. It's going to become very close. But speaking of the Colorado Rockies, though.
The team.
Yeah, that's a rough one. That team is terrible. It's trending to being one of the worst teams since, like, turn of the century stuff. And it's like, oh, boy. I believe right now they're at a 220 win clip. I mean, in terms of their win percentage.
That's insane.
So they're on track, if I heard correctly. They're on track to lose over 120 games, which would just be like mind-boggling. I was gonna
say, if you're not a baseball fan, that is an insane number.
That would end up being like just knowing it's a 160-game season. To give you an example, let's say they'd lose 120. That means their record would be 42 and 120.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A team like that, that's world. Like an MLB team playing against a Little League team. It's just not – it's unreal.
Now, the other thing I would say on the positive side, now, mind you, I'm wearing my favorite team bias. Cal Raleigh, catcher for the Mariners. I'm in absolute heaven. That guy is tearing it up with 38 home runs. Yeah, 38 home runs by the break. I mean, the break is officially at the time of our taping here. It just started today for the All-Star game, which we have some thoughts on here too, but I will say it's pretty cool to watch a catcher, you know, on fire. I know if you're Nick, right, our buddy is a Yankees fan, he's not liking it because it's taking away a little bit of love for Judge, who's a stud. Hey, who saw this coming? Cal Raleigh, catcher for the Mariners, leading all of baseball by far, and he's had, I don't know how many games we've hit, 2 in 1 game.
I was on a different podcast. I compared Cal Raleigh to Mike Piazza as just one of the all-time best catchers you'll ever see.
And even then, Mike Piazza did not have a year like this with home runs.
No. Yeah. He was just all around a good player.
Correct.
But big hitter like Cal Raleigh, no.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, 38 home runs by the break. So he's in great shape. I'm kind of liking that. Now, don't get me wrong. You can't ignore that a Judge who's only home runs behind him is also batting .355, which is pretty cool. But I'm a Mariner fan, so I kind of like anywhere we can grab some good press.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And with that, we'll see you guys after the break. Hi, this is Thomas Crowder of Desert Highway Radio. If you're a fan of sports, then keep on listening to Generational Talent. But if you like movies, music, TV, any sort of pop culture, really, then you want to tune in to Mic'd Up and Mildly Qualified, playing every other Friday from Desert Highway Radio. It features myself, as well as the talents of Nick Beaton and Matt Phillips. So again, if you're a pop culture fan, listen to Mic'd Up and Mildly Qualified.
All right, we're back. You know, I love this. This is the segment where we got some hot button stuff, some things to decide or to at least go back and forth on, because for those of you that don't know, Tommy's in his 20-somethings. I'm in my 50-somethings. So we align on some cases we don't. Thank God we're not talking about Batman and Superman. He'd kill me right now.
Yeah.
But that being said, I got one for you. I got a question to ask you. I don't even know if you heard about this. It's sad, really, but I want to get your take. John Elway.
Yeah.
Did you hear what kind of happened, unfortunately, with him?
No.
So get this. His lifelong friend and former agent, okay? His name's Jeff Sperbeck. You know, buddies. They've been together for a long, long time. I don't know if it was goofing around. I don't know what the content of it was, but he had accidentally, while golfing with him, took a turn hard, who knows what, tossed his buddy out. Buddy died.
Jeez. Yeah, I see a golf cart crash.
Yep. So his NFL Hall of Famer, John Elway, won't be charged. Here's the take, right? He's not going to be charged after his former agent, Jeffrey Spurbeck, was fatally injured by falling out of his golf cart at a Southern California golf resort community last April. Authorities said Spurbeck, who is 62, died after suffering an injury when he tumbled out of a golf cart driven by by Elway. Okay. Riverside County Sheriff, said on Friday that the investigators found nothing criminal and ruled it a tragic accident. The cause of death was a blunt force trauma. So, I mean, I can't say that the guy should have been serving jail time, but I guess my take on this would be, I hope the family is satisfied with the fact it was just a terrible accident, because I'm like, man, how did you toss him out of your golf cart?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm looking right here. The county coroner office, you know, like you said, ruled it accidental. So Bianco, who is this gentleman? Sheriff Chad Bianco took a look at the footage. He says, I've looked at video 100 times. There's no explanation as to why he fell off. He just fell off. You know, it's one of those things. If you're the family of John Elway, obviously, you know, you hear that straight from the sheriff. Like, nobody quite understands. It's not like it was done intentionally. I'm not saying that they're going to be completely satiated with anything, but at least you can walk away from that saying John Elway did not purposefully do anything. Yeah, right. Here.
And it is clear too, this guy, I mean, he had off the field business with him when it came to restaurants and car dealerships and a winery. So they were definitely close.
Yeah, no, definitely an unfortunate thing there. Yeah. Jumping in here, I've got for you a list of some NFL undrafted free agents as of recording today on, July 14th. We've got Rasul Douglas, corner. Now, Rasul Douglas, if I was to pull up his stats here, again, I'll pull up both the corners so that I've got listed.
Yeah, you got
here.
A couple of them here, yeah.
So, Asante Samuel Jr. is the other one mm-hmm. I have. So, mm-hmm. why is it that a cornerback like Rasul Douglas is undrafted? Now, most people will go immediately into saying it's his age. He's at 30 years old, which if you're in the NFL, 30
And this would be unrestricted free agents.
I do believe so, yes.
Yeah, unrestricted, not undrafted. Unrestricted free agents. In other words, they're still out there on the market.
Yes. And as of right now, he's still unsigned. He was originally a third-round pick from the Eagles, spent first 3 seasons of his career in Philadelphia mm-hmm. before being in Carolina. And then the Packers signed him off the Cardinals practice squad in 2021. He broke out in a big way. But then all of a sudden, you know, after the Packers had him for a while, the Bills acquired him and they let him walk. And the Bills have been doing this quite a bit. A lot of these free agents I have on here are from the Bills.
Corners are tricky because here's the thing. We just signed one that just came off of this list.
Shaquille, right?
Shaq Griffin, yeah. And we just signed him to $3 million, right? $3 million is like practically nothing in the NFL. Here's the problem. It's a position that once you get to it, you hate to say it in the NFL, it's crazy. I don't know if you have Rasul Douglas's age there, but my guess would be if he's in his late 20s, like a 28, 29, 30, you're reaching a point that typically, I'm not saying all the time, in the corner position, though, you're asked to cover these guys that are, you know, 20, 21, 22, 23 coming out of college. They've got that leg. They've got that speed. You're as a corner, you're having to play a different kind of game now in terms of cover them. Being able to keep up with them is going to be a little trickier, and you see it all the time.
I was going to say, when you look at, and I would say the same goes for Asante Samuel.
Big names.
Both him and Douglas, you're not looking at a manned corner. You're looking at a zone corner now, which, again, some teams could definitely have a use for it. The interesting thing is, I don't know if it was both of them, but for sure, Asante Samuel, the Dolphins had a lot of interest in them, but I don't know if you've noticed, corners do not want to sign with the Dolphins after the Jalen Ramsey trade because they just don't think that they'll be treated correctly over there. So while there was talk of, you know, definitely Asante Samuel and probably Rasul Douglas as well, they have denied the initial contract negotiations from the Dolphins.
That's pretty sad, too, when you're a free agent and you're denying teams. I mean, you know, I don't know what kind of laundry list of folks they have coming. I do think they'll get picked up, but I think it'll be like what we did with Shaq Griffin, the Seahawks.
Yeah.
In terms of you're going to get him for like almost a league minimum. You're going to see how he is, but he's going to be that third or fourth corner. He's not going to be your top two. No way.
So the next one I've got on here is wide receiver Keenan Allen.
I'm surprised, actually, he's still on that.
Me, too.
That he hasn't been picked
up. Because I'll tell you right now, I'm looking at his stats right here. 2024, 70 receptions, 744 yards with an average of 10.6 yards and 7 touchdowns, which mirrors his final season in L.A. With, I mean, definitely not as many receptions, 108, but still 7 touchdowns.
Well, and here's what I would say there. On a team where that offensive line last year was so terrible, your quarterback was running for his life. And so I think if given a pocket, which I think the Bears did make a lot of really good improvements, he probably would have been having a way better year. That quarterback had no time to throw. He was running for his life.
Thing. I'll give the Bears all the credit in the world. This offseason, they have stacked that O-line like nobody's business. This would be the time to kind of pick up a Keenan Allen. Now, obviously, the Bears aren't picking him up, at least as of right now. Where do you think is a good landing spot for somebody like Keenan Allen?
So you got a veteran wide receiver who is still, I think, he's still good. I think he's still, I think he's definitely on the tail end. But I kind of look at it like I do with a cut. There's another wide receiver on this list we're going to get to. I would say this. If he's in a role where he is the third receiver on that team, I definitely don't know if he's top two anymore. But if he's on a, if he's the third guy on a team that's got some young rookies or young play, I think he's a great fit. What would that look like? You know, I think if he took the role that with Houston as an example, you got two stud young guys and you lost Diggs, which I think was a good move anyways. I think Diggs kind of is a chemistry issue. I think he'd be a great fit there for some senior leadership on those two stud wide receivers that Houston has. So a team like that, I think, would be where I would land.
All right. No, I don't disagree at all. You know, sometimes it's good to have that veteran presence in there.
Yeah.
So next on the list, we've got a defensive player here in Mr. Von Miller. Now, this one is the oldest member of this little list I've put together here. But when we take a look at his stats here, Von Miller last year with the Bills was able to still notch up six sacks. At I think he's 38.
And he was a limited player. He didn't play every down.
Yeah.
So that part right there doesn't, you know, really say too bad for him, I don't think. Because, I mean, that really, he didn't play a lot of snaps.
I was going to say, in 2023, zero sacks. And then his first year with the Bills in 22, he was a, hold on here, eight sacks on the year.
Okay.
But his final season with the Broncos, he left them with, looks like, 4.5 sacks. So, I mean, he's still definitely worth your time in terms of somebody who, again, not full usage, but limited uses on those big snap plays. That is somebody I'd love to plug in. I'm looking at it when you've got the game on the line. Throwing a Von Miller out there is not going to hurt you.
He's disruptive. I mean, that's why I think, you know, I think he's still got some tank or some fuel in that tank. I just think, same thing, though. I would use him as a role like your third down rusher. You know, you're going to want him in situations where he can put some good pressure on that quarterback. I don't know that he's got a lot of the run-stopping game anymore. He'd be a pressure, you know, from the ends.
Yeah, no, and definitely interesting here because we're gonna jump into our next one. Gabe Davis.
Can't figure him out.
That is an interesting one because that was a dude who, again, had the really, really phenomenal year with some pivotal catches for the Bills and then just wasn't able to recreate it. Mm-hmm. He goes to Jacksonville where the whole 2024 Jacksonville Jaguar season is honestly an anomaly as to how bad they were. It almost doesn't make any sense.
On paper, it doesn't. That team should have been way better. And Gabe Davis is not that old. I mean, I don't know why he hasn't. I got to believe he's, what, 26, 27?
Born in 99.
He's 26. So, I mean, to me, from a wide receiver standpoint, he should be right now hitting his stride in terms of really good. So I'm not sure why he's still out there. Could be a chemistry issue, though, because when you got players that bounce around year to year, that's, to me, always a bad sign.
As I say, he was targeted 42 times, caught 20 of them. Oof. He got two touchdowns, average of 11.9. It's huge difference from Buffalo because you look at Buffalo, it's almost identical seasons for all five of his years there or four.
From a statistical deal, that's a terrible year.
Yeah, no, you look at Buffalo and, you know, he gets 7-6, 7-7 for the touchdowns in all the years that he was in Buffalo and then targeted, you know, 62, 63, 93, 81, and, you know, he's getting about 50% of them he's reeling in for receptions. But, yeah, just an interesting player. Now, a player like him, not surprising that I guess he wasn't pulled back into Jacksonville, but where do you think a landing spot for him might be?
Yeah, I would think if he's healthy, he'd be good anywhere. I mean, you got a guy who, in terms of his prime, he should be right there now. So, minus an injury or something that's not present, I would think he'd be a good fit as number two almost anywhere, really. I mean, he's young enough, and I think he's still good. I'm not sure. Jacksonville has a lot more questions than they do answers in terms of why that team did as poorly as they did. But I would think Gabe Davis, let's put it this way, if I'm looking for a receiver, I'm going him between these other guys, especially the one you're mentioning next.
Well, yeah, let's get into that one then. Yet another Buffalo Bills player, Amari Cooper. And this one's a strange one. I mean, you have a dude who was on the Raiders, and you could almost say he was trapped on the Raiders, made his way to Dallas where he had some absolutely phenomenal seasons. He had two of them over 1,000 yards, but consistent with at least five or more touchdowns every season with Dallas. Then gets traded to Cleveland, has two stellar years with Cleveland with over 1,000 yards and nine touchdowns in 2022, and then falls off hard in 2024 with only 250 yards and touchdown.
Of course, so did the team. I mean, that team's quarterback situation was a nightmare.
And the weirdest thing is, you know, obviously then he gets traded to Buffalo. Buffalo is looking for just a key game changer to be able to bring them all the way to the Super Bowl. Right.
Which I thought was a good move when they did it.
Yeah, I think everybody did. Yep. And Amari ends up having only 47 more yards with Buffalo in 2024 than he did in his worst season with Cleveland.
No, he was absent.
Two touchdowns in both of his last two seasons. In Buffalo, he only had 20 receptions, averaged 14.9 yards. So when he got the ball, he was able to do something with it, but unfortunately just did not get the ball as much. And it was his, and I don't have that stat in front of me, but if I'm remembering correctly, his drop percentage in that one season with Buffalo was 14%, which is very high for somebody of his caliber and his pay grade. And so you can't count on him in those big game moments. And, you look at the Bills, and it's like, well, so you guys go from Gabe Davis, who, again, had his moments and all of a sudden fell off, to Amari Cooper, who just can't even get those moments. You almost don't know what
The wide receivers, the role at wide receivers, it's a revolving door. I look at wide receivers much like I look at corners. Where you start getting to a certain age, it's hard to be able to maintain the level you're doing. And I think in receivers, once you start getting those late 20s, early 30s, your best days are way behind you.
Yeah, no, and, I don't know a landing spot for him because that one's a risk no matter which way you cut
especially it. Depending on what you're paying him. I mean, I don't know what his salary demands are, but they don't match up to his play.
Yeah, no, not at all. It'd be interesting to see where he goes. If I'm remembering as well, I think he said he wanted to play on the West Coast, which, again, you know, Seahawks, we've already gotten our aging vet.
Yeah, we got, and I'm hoping he's healthy. You're talking about Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, and then obviously the Rams were able to receive Devontae Adams.
Uh-huh. They're good. And that goes along with Nacua, so they're good.
Now, 49ers, I could see as a landing spot for him.
Yeah, sure. They just lost their guy. Yeah. To Washington, yeah.
They lost him to Washington, and then Ayuk, I think, is injured for the start of the season as well.
Yeah, and he wasn't healthy last year. He was a mess.
I don't think he was all that good last year at all.
Nope. Chargers, maybe a landing spot, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, at that point, though, send Keenan Allen. Odds are better.
Right, yeah, and again, I would put him in that category. Maybe your third down receiver. I wouldn't have him on the field for first and second downs. No way.
No. And then our final one here on the list, which is just a fun one because I don't know how to feel about this guy.
I have one take on it, yeah.
Carson Wentz. Obviously, if you didn't know, he was the backup for KC last year, where he yet again lost to his backup from Philadelphia in a Super Bowl.
Right.
Because although, yes, Nick Foles and him were on the same team, let's be honest, he lost that Super Bowl and had to watch his backup basically get all the glory. And here it is yet again, his backup, Jalen Hurts, went ahead and absolutely destroyed him in the Super Bowl.
Right. I would say this about Carson Wentz. I would only have this take. Do I think he's got some playing ability? Maybe backup for sure. Do I think he's got an opportunity to start? There's one team I would think should take him.
You would say the Saints.
I would say the Saints, yeah. Right? Because I think, he's better than who you've got in that locker room in terms of if he's still got his – and I do believe he's got some playing ability. I think he gives you your best chance to win some games. But I also think if you're the Saints and you end up with the number one pick and you end up with the grandson, to Archie Manning, which is probably the likelihood the Manning kid's probably going to be the number one pick, that would be ironic if he ends up with the Saints.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. Wentz is an interesting one. Obviously – that dude's career has just been...
It's all over.
It's a strange one. I mean, the dude brings him all the way to the Super Bowl, can't get it done, and somebody else does it. He gets traded to the Colts, where he has one season, and he wasn't even that bad with the Colts. The problem was he was bad in the worst moments. And so, I don't know if you remember the one play, I want to say it was against the Cowboys, but I'm not sure, where instead of just taking the sack, he tried to throw the ball, gets intercepted right in there for a touchdown because he's throwing it on the end zone. It just... dumb plays really cost him out there at Indiana. He then bounced over to Washington Commanders. That was short-lived, and then has just been a backup since. And he's a serviceable backup. I think, again, if you're putting him in as a starter, you're accepting a game manager, which I don't think he wouldn't be able to do, but I don't think you're going to go anywhere with him.
No, I think he's in that Flacco category to where he's good to have on a roster there for a veteran and leadership and will give you a decent chance. I mean, I think we can all agree more than half the league in terms of backups, he's going to be better than. But in terms of your starting quarterback, again, I think he gives the Saints maybe their best chance to win some games, but anywhere else, I wouldn't see him being anywhere but number two or three on the depth charts.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is that's all the talk for our undrafted free agents.
We'll have to see how many of these guys get picked up in the coming weeks.
Yeah, no, I agree. Any injuries pop up in the NFL, right. These guys are going to be plugged in.
Yep.
Overrated versus underrated. I'm going to name some players, and I want your thoughts on whether they're overrated or underrated. We're going to start with the NFL here, and I want to go straight into Justin Herbert.
Oh, good one right out of the gate, huh? I do believe he's very good. Do I believe that the hype isn't matching with the win losses? I don't. I don't believe that it's equal. I think he, so I would have to say right now, I'm going to say overrated until he actually starts winning and getting these teams, you know, into at least some playoffs.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say right now he's overrated.
I was going to say the one playoff stint that we saw, that ugly, ugly loss to Jacksonville, is the one time that they were able, and then the other time, I guess, where you talk about potential playoff stuff would have been that one where they all they had to do was tie against the Raiders and both of them make it on, and nope, Raiders went ahead and took it from them.
Yep.
Number two, another quarterback here. We're going to go Brock Purdy. Overrated or underrated? Now, this one's a...
I want to hear your take first.
I'm going to say straight up he's overrated. I think Brock Purdy is serviceable. I think he was also plugged into a very, very good position where most quarterbacks could have done the same job he did. I think... And this might be a hot take. I don't care. I think Jimmy Garoppolo was better than him, just had more injuries. But I think skill-wise, JG was better. JG just couldn't stay healthy, whereas Brock Purdy can.
Right.
But, you know, Brock Purdy had his moment to wow the world and win a Super Bowl. He couldn't do it. I will say he was great against the Chiefs, but he couldn't do it. And he had an all-star stacked roster with a ton of, you know, weapons on both offense and defense and couldn't get it done. And in reality, when you look at that one Super Bowl that he did have against the Chiefs, the main difference maker was QB. Because you had weapons on both teams, on both sides, but only one quarterback can do the crazy plays. And as much as I hate Patrick Mahomes, that dude, he is going to win you games because of his play, whereas Brock Purdy wasn't at that point. You know, and it's also one of those things, he's in a division where the Seahawks are, okay, we're not great. We've been up and down. Cardinals are a joke. And the Rams, again, they're either really good or really bad, no matter which way you cut it. So it's a division in which you can come out looking pretty good. I don't think he's worth as much as they're going to pay him. And I think in reality, you could plug anybody in there.
So here's what I would say. I agree with a lot of that. The only thing I would say is up until this point, you'd have to say underrated in the sense of value for money.
He gets his contract.
Correct. Yeah. I think a lot is going to be answered this year. A lot. Because now he's paid. You can no longer have that little cloud hanging over him going, well, yeah, but I'm underpaid, but I'm underpaid. Now you're paid with the big boys. So, and you're on a team and you're right. And this team is built differently than most Niners teams. So I think he is in that danger zone where if he does not do well, oh, he's way overpaid and he'll be overrated. If he can play up to the contract and honor the contract and play at that level, oh, I would say, you know, he might be the real deal, but this will be the, in my opinion, his first real test under the pressure that now comes with it.
Yeah.
He had no pressure before.
Their team is not at all the same as it was last year.
It's a very different look.
Drake London, wide receiver for the Atlanta Falcons.
It's hard. On this one, I'll jump in. I would say I feel he's overrated right now, but here's where my take goes there. I also know you're in a position that relies so heavily on your quarterback. So with that quarterback completely being a disaster locker room, that even that whole team going into this season, what a mess. So I would think he's got the talent. I think it's kind of interesting. You don't have him on this list, but I would put him in there with his tight end Pitts in the same category.
So I feel like nowadays everybody would probably view Pitts as like he had the one season and everybody just thought he would ride it. And then it was clear that was a one season fluke.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah, I would say he's overrated too. But again, you know, how would they be if they can solve that quarterback position? That's the question, because I do think these guys are good, but I think it relies so heavily on a quarterback and they just don't have a stable one. Penix is a big question mark. Cousins, I don't even know. I mean, he's still on the roster, but there's all kinds of talk that Cousins is going to be traded, right? So I don't know if you're in that position so dependent on quarterbacks. Right now, I'm going to say he's overrated. He is not.
So I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to say he's underrated. I'm going to say it for one reason and one reason alone, and that is the 2022 Atlanta Falcons roster, where you have three quarterbacks: Felipe Franks, Desmond Ridder, and Logan Woodside.
That's the 2022 roster?
That is the 2022 roster, okay, for quarterback. But yet...
When did he join in the league?
2022.
Okay.
And that same year, with those three nobody QBs, that man had 72 receptions, 866 yards, an average of 12 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Then it gets worse, and yet he gets better. I was going to say, you know, you look at, obviously Michael Penix Jr. could be a game changer for this franchise.
Could be.
They need to figure out what the heck they're going to do with Kirk Cousins, but we saw glimpses of Penix, and again, he could very well potentially be a franchise QB. It's hard to say. We didn't get enough of a look at him.
Right.
But as of right now, that they haven't had anything. They've been rolling with Ritter. And yet this man managed to then get 905 yards the next season and then over 1,000 the season after with garbage QB play. You throw this receiver on a team that has a QB, like if let's be honest, if Drake London was on the Chiefs, and everybody be you know, blown away by how big these stats could get.
Could be.
Because I don't know. Like you were saying, it depends solely on a QB sometimes.
Right.
And he hasn't had one yet, still has managed to get some insane numbers. And nine touchdowns last year with the quarterback mess that we saw.
Yeah, Penix, I put him in the same category as Anthony Richardson, too. You're in that same boat.
Oh, I hate Anthony Richardson.
You got a lot to prove, though, because you got to win.
Yeah, no,
and in the NFL, you got to win now. I mean, nobody wants to wait.
Penix is in a better position than Michael Richardson, so I will give him a little bit more leniency there in terms of just some better weapons and just, you know, overall a better roster aside from the goofy QB situation, whereas Richardson doesn't have much to throw to. I just don't like Richardson because I don't think he quite understands where he's at.
He's a great AC. He comes across as a great guy, but yeah, in the locker room, something's not working.
Yeah, no, not at all. Okay. Up next, I can't stand this little dude either. Kyler Murray.
I'm always going to say overrated because, you know, I think the talent is there. I think he's like from a physical skill set. It's
much
there.
Like Richardson. I just don't think they care.
Yeah. he doesn't come across to you. And they say he doesn't put in the time on the film and the locker room. And I think so too. And you can see it in the transition of players that come and go there. Lots of talent has left that team and they seem to be jumping ship right about the time that he was at the helm. And I think the coach, you know, previous coach did a terrible job with him in terms of managing
Kingsbury.
That. Yeah. Didn't manage that big head of his because that was his boy in college, right? And so to me, I would absolutely say that Kyler Murray's a bust.
I would say, don't get me wrong, they made the right move getting rid of Josh Rosen for him because he is better than Rosen.
Oh, yeah.
But this guy's not your franchise QB. He's not going to get you there. And he looks like a toddler throwing a tantrum when he runs around.
Yeah.
I can't take that seriously.
There's just no consistency with him.
Up next, Mike Evans, and I'll take the helm on this one. I love Mike Evans.
I knew you did.
And I'm not a Tampa Bay guy, but I freaking love Mike Evans. That is one of the most consistent wide receivers that is not some prima donna like Stephon Diggs and the rest of them.
Right.
He just goes down there, gets the job done. He'll get the same 1,000-plus yard season no matter who's throwing him the ball. The dude is an absolute rock star, and I feel like he does not get put in enough conversations with the Justin Jeffersons or, you know, who are the other big
Well, he doesn't have the flashiness. That's why I will agree with you. He's the epitome of consistency. And
he hates Marshawn Lattimore and beats the crap out of him every time they play. I love
that. Well, they talk a lot of smack. Yeah. No, but I do like he's consistent. That's what I like about him. I mean, you know, you get what you get, and you're right. He's not real flashy, and I like that. I like all of that.
Yeah, I'm just looking up because I want to see he's made it over 10 seasons. Yeah, literally from his starting season in 2014, that man has not had less than 1,000 yards. Now, I will say he's played it close, 2017, 1,001, and then this most recent season, 1,004. But, I mean, show me a quarterback or a wide receiver who's got 10 years of 1,000-plus yard seasons. You just don't see it.
Consistent all the way. So, no, I think he's underrated.
And
I think he's
31 years old.
Yeah, which is going to be where things start to change for him. Yeah, for sure.
Up next, we've got Sauce Gardner. Sauce Gardner, obviously defensive rookie of the year, alongside his friend Garrett Wilson, who was offensive rookie of the year in at the New York Jets facility there. But Sauce Gardner, very famous cornerback for, you know, just absolute speed and agility. However, for all the talent that was on that Jets roster, they bombed last year. And yes, you can blame a lot of that on Aaron Rodgers. But at the same time, with the offensive and defensive rookies of the year and all this other talent on both ends of the ball, was it just a fluke season where these guys were great? Because we have not seen that, you know, happen again.
I do think he's a shutdown corner all the way. I think to your point though, I think why that team, I firmly believe it's coaching. Their coaching's been terrible.
It's been a mess.
It's been a mess and ownership. That Woody Johnson, I think is his name.
Yeah.
Woody, terrible owner. He's too involved, too engaged. It's the old Washington football program's problem with their owner. It's what's been the case with the Dallas Cowboys for the last couple of decades. You have these owners that are way too involved in terms of the actual management of the players on the field, and it shows. And I would say in that particular case with the Jets, the owner needs to step away and let football people run the football program and get a good coach in there. Because I do believe Sauce Gardner is a stud. I think he's a shutdown corner, and he's awesome.
See, to me, I think when you look at the production and the stats, there are so many other corners that are better. I think he was flashy in the moment, especially coming off the fact that it was his rookie season where he was as good as he was, but he has not been able to match those stats from his rookie season. And on the same time, you've also got a big prima donna there. The one argument you hear a lot of when it comes to Sauce Gardner is the holding penalties, whether he's getting away with a bunch of them or it's costing him steam. But the production, the stats alone, right? You go from 75 combined tackles all the way down to 49 this most recent season, 24 assists down to 13. He's gotten one sack his whole career and two interceptions the first season, nothing 2023, and then one in 24. There are so many other corners with jacked up stats.
And here's what I would say to that, because they don't throw his way. You know, I think as Sherman used to hear that, Richard Sherman used to hear that all the time. But you don't get all the interceptions. You don't get all this. Well, they don't throw his way. I think when you're the shutdown corners, you know, you don't typically want to go that route because the guy's not going to be open. And if he is, not that it's a fluke, but I mean, there was a stat there for a while. Sauce Gardner hadn't given up a single touchdown while covering his guys.
Okay.
So I do think he's a shutdown corner all the way.
All right. We'll jump into our next quarterback here, Lamar Jackson. Now, I'll say I think Lamar Jackson is overrated. I think a big part of being a winner and being hyped up and earning it is playoff wins and rings. And I know that not everybody feels that way. You can look at an Aaron Rodgers who's got tons of MVPs and amazing stats, and you could say he's a Hall of Fame, you know, first ballot candidate, and I get it. I don't disagree, and I would say Lamar falls into that same category. But to me, they don't hold a candle to a Tom Brady to where, yeah, he wasn't getting all the MVPs, but he was getting the rings.
He wins.
And to me, what is the better sign of winning? It's getting the ring. It's going all the way and doing it all. And so, yeah, congrats on these MVP caliber players, but you can't win in the playoffs.
You got to get to a Super Bowl. And that's why I put Lamar in that category, because that, especially last year's team. Last year's team, you know, with your running backs, they were stacked. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, so I kind of look at it going, that team should have made it to a Super Bowl. They were all, you know, they were good enough to do that. I do think he is amazing, though. I will say this. And I say amazing, I agree. I think there's a win factor that needs to come into play. But on the field, he blows my mind with the amount of yards he gets with his feet and the pinpoint accuracy at times.
I was going to say, the passing is inconsistent, though.
Yeah, I don't know. If you look at last year's numbers, I would say they were fantastic. Now, and he's got talent. That guy's got good receivers.
No, he's definitely talented.
And him and his tight end, Andrews, are in sync. Those two, I mean, they are Batman and Robin.
They keep Andrews because, yeah, man, they were ready to run him out of Baltimore after last season's playoff. Yeah,
that was definitely a rough one, but he's such a good player. I don't know that it would come off it, but the stats that Lamar Jackson puts up year in and year out, and I know that's just stats. I agree. That gets into the category discussion of Dan Marino, to where it's more than just stats. And I do think I think winning a Super Bowl would be great, but he's got to get to one.
He's 2-4 in the playoffs. The man is a regular season god. Nobody will argue that.
Yeah. MVP but a couple of times, I believe.
Twice. Just like Dak Prescott, though, it only gets you so far.
Right.
If you can't make it count in the games that matter the most, then what does it matter how good you are in the regular season?
I would say this, though. Dak has got all kinds of other issues. He's injury. He can't stay healthy. I don't think he's a good leader on the field. I think the one thing about Lamar Jackson, the players love him. The coaches love him. And I think he's a first on, first off, or last off kind of a guy, it appears. And he's got a great locker room presence. So I think you get a little bit more, because I do agree with what you're saying in terms of talent that just never, you know, kind of realizes stuff. But I do think the talent's there. I think with Dak, it's just a matter of, there's a guy to me way overrated, way overrated.
Yeah, no, that's fair. For the last one, we're gonna get into a different position here. We're gonna go football linebacker Jack Campbell for the Detroit Lions. For those of you that don't know, he's a middle linebacker selected in the first round of the 2023 NFL draft. And now this guy, in my opinion, very underrated. I think he is a rock star.
I'd have to know more about him, to be completely honest with you. I don't know a whole lot about him.
And that's the point, right? Because nobody knows about him. And Jack Campbell is a player that he's considered underrated by some, particular after a strong performance in his second season. So here's what to know. He improved his performance in 2024. His PFF grade jumped from 57.2 as a rookie to 78.7. His run defense and coverage grades also saw substantial increases. He's undervalued. He's a quiet leader. His Madden rating, if you care about that, is a 83.
Depending on your age demographic, you definitely do.
Some people really take those Madden ratings to heart. You see players get mad about it if they don't like it.
Yeah.
So, again, linebacker, let me take a look at his stats here. So, Detroit Lions, hell of a season last year, but the one thing you could say about the Detroit Lions is they took a ton of injury. You know, I think it puts 49ers to shame with the amount of injuries they had.
When they're healthy, that team is loaded.
Now, pull up the sacks here. Here we go.
Now there. Yeah, go for it.
So career, gosh, I don't like the way that this, sorry. Two sacks last year, solo tackles 43, combined tackles 95, tackle, blah, blah, blah. What my point is, though, is this man stayed healthy. And when you look at the Detroit Lions as a team, the one thing that is surprising is how deep they made it into the playoffs because of the injuries. You lose Aiden Hutchinson, you lose a whole bunch of your offense and defensive players that are, you know, the keynote players. But Jack Campbell, small scale pick, I think he was late round 2023. Manages to cover it, manages to stay in there. Oh, I was looking at the 2023 stats. So for his solo tackles in 2024 is 59, combined 131, assisted 62.
I was going to say, that other one was kind of, I don't know that I'd say he's underrated, but yeah.
Yeah, no, solo tackles so far in his 2 years in the NFL is 102, combined tackles 226.
I look at it this way. From a linebacker's perspective, stats-wise, if you're fairly good, you're doing well. If you're anywhere over 100, especially closer to 150, those are your good linebackers. So would I put him as underrated? I'm not going to put him as underrated right now. I would not put him as overrated either, but I would think you need some more time on the field because you've only got a couple of years to look at with him. And I think he had a good year last year, but I would want to see another year like that for one. That's or fair. more.
Is there any other players that you wanted to throw out there from NFL?
Well, I'll tell you one. I mean, I think we can all agree, in my opinion, Aaron Rodgers is about as overrated as you possibly can be.
I didn't put him on there because I felt everybody thinks he's overrated. Right.
Now, I would have said differently maybe 4 or 5 years ago, but I would say in these last handful of years, his play on the field hasn't met up with anything that he talks about, the way he portrays himself as some god. I would say, you know, you easily could have made an argument for him a handful of years ago, but in recent years, he's terribly overrated.
All right, so jumping on to the next stuff here. Originally, I had NBA and MLB players for this, but...
You want to save those?
I am going to save those because we're at the 40-minute mark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we've got 20 minutes left of this show, and I've got two other topics I'd like to talk about. That, and we can bring Nick on for these other ones because he's got a little bit more knowledge about this than I do.
Okay.
So jumping on to the next thing, sticking with the NFL here, guys, if you haven't noticed, that's kind of the one sport I love the most, is what quarterback do you think is most in the hot seat this season in terms of keeping his job? Because there's lots of arguments to be made, but... We've got a season here. Let's hear your take.
What quarterback is in the hot seat in terms of their play? So, in other words, the eyes are upon you, and it's time to step up or step off.
I would say who I believe should be, though I don't know if the team views it that way, is Dak Prescott. I think that is a man who, again, has not been able to get where he needs to go immediately. And I think it's a situation, too, where that's a team that has all the talent. And I think a change in QB could be what brings them to a Super Bowl. And I don't think Dak's the guy to bring them there. And I'm sure he's a nice guy. I've read nothing but that he's the nicest person and a good dude off the field. And that's great. But you're a football quarterback. You got to win games for people to give a crap about you, my friend. And so... I don't know. That would be my first one right off the top.
Well, I got a couple for you. Here's what I would say. We talked about a few of them. I got to believe, again, just like we talked about when it comes to now he's getting paid. I think Brock Purdy, the eyes are going to be on him. I don't think he'll be benched or anything like that, but do I think the pressure's on him? Absolutely, because now you are paid to be in the top tier with all the rest of them, and you better deliver.
Yeah, no. Do you have another one? Because I've got two more.
I do. I got, and we talked about him too. Herbert.
Herbert. Oh, no, I didn't have that one. Okay.
I think Herbert because I do believe he's got the talent. He's kind of that Aaron Rodgers effect where like the talent's there. Not Aaron Rodgers now, but back in the day.
Yeah.
To where the talent is there. The guy can win. You got to eventually, though. I mean, you've got your quarterback, you know, or you've got your coach who loves you, and you got a good coach. You got a team that's got good players on it. At some point, you have got to win. And I know you're in a division with Kansas City. I get it. But so what? You've got to win. If you can't win your division there with the Chiefs, how are you going to get to the Super Bowl anyway? So you better make that leap and get past Mahomes.
You're talking about Kyler? Oh, you're talking about Justin Herbert right now.
Justin Herbert, yep. Who do you got? I got two more, but I want to hear yours.
Okay, so my next one, I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I'm going to say Tua Tagovailoa. I think Tua is one where...
Sorry, Nick.
Yeah, and again, it's kind of why I wanted him to be here for this, but because I know he would defend this guy. I'm sure he would. Too much injuries. I mean, no matter which way you cut it, this man is
fragile.
A danger to your team because he is either going to be healthy and he can sling that ball like nobody's business, or he's out for an extended period of time because he can't cover his brain.
I think that's the kicker right there. Like, I think the talent's there. I think if he stays healthy, he's a winner. But I think that is the problem right there. I think, you know, when he's healthy, he's great. But you need a quarterback to be able to play a whole season. He can't do it otherwise. And he's yet to show that. So hot seat, I would say this. I think he's on a seat to where you either win, buddy, and stay healthy, or it's time to back off.
And then the reason I would put him somewhat higher on this list, too, in terms of who's the most in the hot seat is because of all the changes that him and Brock Purdy both, I would say, are in that position of not only do you need to really sell it this year, your team just got worse, so it's even harder to sell it this year.
Yep. You know, Niner fans will tell you that they didn't get worse, but yeah, I do believe they did.
Fans, you're idiots. Who'd you have for your next one?
I have to say Sam Darnold. I mean, we are in that same category, but we're, you know, most of you guys know we're Tommy and I are Seahawks fans. At the end of the day, he's on the hot seat. I mean, he's because he went to a team. He had a great, great year. Ended on a bad note in the playoffs, terribly. But he's on a team now for us that we're expecting him to walk in and be the guy.
See, and I almost wouldn't say he's on a hot seat only because I view it as he knows this is simply temporary, right? Like, I don't want him there for extended period of time. I want us to have a – honestly, and maybe this is crazy and maybe Seahawks fans will hate me for this, I wish we wouldn't have drafted him, stuck with some garbage player, and went ahead and bombed and got ourselves an Arch Manning.
Now, people will make the argument that with Milroy, you've got the guy – you've got a good quarterback that's sitting there out of Alabama.
Maybe there is. And if he is the guy, great. Utilize Darnold. Get him, you know, that veteran presence to help build him up as a player, and
but when you say he's not going to be around for, you know, what, 3 years? I mean, we gave him $90 million.
How often do they always go through the end of their contracts?
I know. I don't get me wrong, too. I think we can speak for Seahawks fans. I want him to have the year he had last year.
I do too. He doesn't have Justin Jefferson to throw to. That's my biggest problem. We've got Jaxon Smith-Njigba. He's a stud. And he's a stud. He's not Justin Jefferson, though. I mean,
but nobody in the league is, though, really.
I know that, but that's why I feel like the stats are overinflated is because, again, if you're Sam Darnold, what better situation could you have had last year?
I know. I don't think it was the best move for him to live. I leave, and I know that's where Cousins wants to go, too.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
Yeah.
Cousins is an idiot.
But and then the last one I would say, I mean, and I know yours, I'll be real quick. I think our boy Gino, too, is kind of in a hot seat.
I thought about putting Gino down only because, again, like he, but the problem with him is I don't think anybody's expecting him.
Yeah,
to
I was gonna
off.
Say that would be the only thing is I don't know that the pressure's on him because the team is. I think he'll definitely be better than anybody they've had there, but I think Carroll's probably got more pressure on him than Geno's got.
My last one, and we talked about him already, but Kyler Murray. I think again, that's a dude who is not playing up to his contract. I don't think the Cardinals are necessarily in win now mode, but I could see them going full rebuild within the next few years.
I think you're right. I think that's the problem for him in terms of, I don't know that it's so much his job's in jeopardy. I think people are just used to him being vanilla. It's what people did with Phillip Rivers for the longest time. They just were like, okay, you know, he's going to win 7 or 8 games like he does every year, and they'll be competitive in games, but he's never going to take them anywhere.
And to
never.
Me, if you're the Cardinals, like, you should want to make that change or make that move because I don't think giving weapons is going to change anything. Like, you need to change the guy throwing the ball. Mm-hmm.
You need to change that locker room. That's why I look at it.
Final thing for this segment, and then we'll get into our bets here. We've got an all-time debate, and this one's a fun little mix between both my podcasts because this is a little bit pop culture and sports. We've got the better sports movie, and I'm not saying the all-time best sports movie because I wouldn't put either of those two in this category, but just the better sports movie, and I stuck with baseball here. We've got Moneyball, the beautiful Brad Pitt movie, versus A League of Their Own, the Tom Hanks banger.
Yep, Moneyball based on Billy Beane, the manager of the Oakland A's, and his interesting way of looking at baseball, which paid off if you're the A's, because back then he was winning with a team that their budget was near the bottom, and yet they were competitive and making playoffs and winning games. But a good movie in general, and A League of Their Own. Here's where the generational comes in play there, stud.
I was hoping that would be the case.
Yep, I'm a League of Their Own guy. I'm a League of Their Own guy because I think from a movie standpoint, it's movie magic. It captures it. I think you got great actors all over the place. I love that it's based on true stories in terms of professional women's baseball league back in the war days when our men were off playing and they had to come up with a product on the field, that a product that I think was near and dear and maybe not the marketable deal, but it had its moment in time, and I think they captured that well. I think there was great humor in there, but from a perspective of watching the movie, and I enjoyed it. It was great, and I'm a Tom Hanks guy all the way. And there's so many lines quoted from that movie all to this very day.
No, that's fair. I would say, you know, obviously I'm going to go Moneyball. I think, number one, Brad Pitt's one of the best actors of all time.
Yeah, I know your mind goes there.
Don't at me on that. That's just the fact. But it was a cool way, because you've seen traditional sports movies all over the place. Remember the Titans, Field of Dreams, where they are inspirational. It's watching your favorite players play to the height of their abilities or come back from something, whatever. But Moneyball wasn't like that. Moneyball took the sport of baseball, and it was like, how do you win regardless of talent? And it was showing you kind of the brain side of how baseball works. Another movie like it that I think just does a piss poor job is Draft Day with Kevin Costner. That's a boring movie. Nobody likes it, but they're
I like Kevin Costner, guys. So
I like Kevin Costner too, to a degree, but I mean, that talk about just a dumb movie, and also the Browns, really, that's who he, okay. But you know, it's an interesting take of like, here's a behind the scenes version of a sports movie, but still has that all encompassing, like, feel good story. Because like you were saying, it's about the A's, who, again, I disagree. I think this is the dumbest part of baseball, is that basically you can buy a team. You know, football, I love that caps are across the board. Right. I think it's the best way to keep things, you know, from being overly favored in one team.
Sure.
Baseball is not like that, though. In reality, you know, your team is based off how much money you have.
If you're a Dodgers fan, you're loving life.
Yeah, and if you're a Yankees fan, you're loving
life. Right,
right. But if you're an A's fan, well, you know, now you lost your team anyways. But, yeah.
You know, you're headed to Vegas, yeah.
Yeah, you know, there was no money. And so it's like, how do you become competitive against a Yankees mm-hmm. or a Dodgers when...
It's a bad model.
It is. And yet, here's the story that shows, hey, all it takes is a smart person who not only can look at baseball and see the plays, but sees the stats and can... almost like looks sure. at stats like puzzle pieces in terms of where are we lacking. Let's find a guy who's good at this one thing. He's maybe not be the best hitter, but he's good at this one thing we're failing at. Yep. And it showed, you know, building this team and the hard part about it too, letting guys go, building the team to where you can win with what you have and still being able to do good. Because again, you have one of the biggest winning streaks with the Oakland A's because of that same model. And yes, they still failed at the very end of it all, but it was the whole journey of like, let's take a look at sports and break it down to where it's not just the biggest, strongest guy in the room.
Where you really got deep dive into on-base percentages and things mm-hmm. that people were never really paying as much of attention to. And he was looking at ball players that got on base. It wasn't the flashy home runs and you know, your guys batting 350 were guys that were getting on base. No matter what it took, they got on base.
Yeah. And well, prime example, right? The Yankees lost to the Dodgers. Now, Aaron Judge, one of the best, you know, baseball players we have right now in terms of hitting, and falls apart in the playoffs, and even then, or in the World Series, sorry, and even then, had he been good, it probably wouldn't have been enough, because right. you got a Freddie Freeman who, again,
went off
pretty much a nobody, but he was good at certain things, and when you combine a bunch of players who are good at different things, this is how a team wins a game.
Baseball is very much chemistry and team and locker room, because, yeah, one guy can't do nothing by in and by himself. You can have the best pitcher in the league. Okay, every fifth day he wins, great. Mm-hmm. So I think it is a chemistry-driven deal, but yes, you're all right, though. It also is money driven, because when you say chemistry, yes, but when you're like your 10th or 11th highest paid player on that particular team would be number one on half the other teams in baseball. That's why you got guys batting in the ninth position that in most teams would be your leadoff or your cleanup hitter. Jazz Chisholm would be a prime example. So I think, you know, there's a lot. I think baseball has some things to work on. They do that profit sharing deal or the luxury tax, to where if I'm the big team spending a lot of money, I've still got to get all the smaller level teams. They'll get a portion of the revenue. Problem is, though, some of those bottom level teams look at that as their profit. So they're just like, thanks, we'll take the check. And they don't improve the team. Hence the Oakland A's that finally got out of there.
Current day Colorado Rockies.
Yeah. There's just teams that are looking at the paycheck and not the end result of, don't you want to win though?
Yeah.
And that's why, to me, you know how I feel about the NFL. I think the NFL is a brilliant model.
I think we do parody well. You know what? It's so interesting though, is when you look at the NFL, so many teams have never won a Super Bowl, and it's an interesting thing to think about, considering they're all paid the same. But that's where your coaching staff comes in, and I'd rather
how you pay that money too.
Yeah, and see, I much rather prefer the NFL's way of doing it, because then it's, well, now you can just improve the people. It doesn't matter how much money there is; you need to improve the people. Whereas with the MLB, it's like, just throw more money at it.
And it's true about the any given Sunday part. I mean, you'll see upsets happen. All I mean, we know as the betting world, and they tend to nail you. But that's exactly it. You see that parody, and that's what I love most about the NFL is the parody. I love the way they run the leagues. I think they've got a great product on the field, but they made it competitive. Nobody wants to see 70-0 games. Nobody wants to see that.
Well, that is our debate. Again, what was the better sports movie, League of Their Own, which is definitely more of a cinematic, you know, feel-good story, versus Moneyball, which is the more in-depth behind-the-scenes look at things. Again, if you listen to this episode and you want to share with us what you think the better movie is, you can reach out to us at Desert Highway Radio on Facebook and Instagram, as well as Reddit. We're going to go ahead and join you guys in segment 3, where we're going to give you some of our favorite bets to make this week. Hello, this is Thomas Crowder again. If you are a fan of your local community of Lyon County, Nevada, and you want to learn more about what's going on, tune into The Morning Show every Thursday, and that's a weekly podcast. I do bi-weekly, but those guys, they really make us work for it over there. Again, Morning Show with Travis, Tommy, and Nick every Thursday. You'll learn more about what's going on, local events, all sorts of things. Welcome back to Generational Talent. It is time to talk about bets. now, One of the biggest bets, I'll start us off here, Dad, if you needed a little bit more time, is the Home Run Derby.
We're looking at the exact same piece, son. Okay. And that's tonight. Yep, that airs tonight.
Now, you use a different betting app than I do. You're on William Hill, right?
Yes, I am.
And I'm on Kalshi, which...
Real quick, can we talk about that, though? Can you talk about your bet last time, or you were doing the over-under? Because it was amazing to me how, in, of all things, they have sports bettors, well, just bettors in general. They know how to dial stuff in. It was, when I heard the number of what you're going to share, I know we talked about it on the last episode. Last episode of our show, and it blew my mind because I'm like, I think that's exactly the over under Tommy was talking about.
So yeah, it was the how many hot dogs eaten by Nathan? Nathan's contest winner. Nathan's hot dog. Yeah, Nathan's famous or whatever it is. Yeah. And they had the odds were the highest at 70 or more, which means again
for Joey Chestnut.
Yeah, for Joey Chestnut, you're not going to make a ton of money off the highest odds ones. But I mean, talk about it to where it literally the one bracket 70 or more was sitting at like 75% last time I looked at it, and then the next highest one up was 75 or more, which all of a sudden dropped down to like 30%, and then 65 or more was also down to 30%, and lo and behold, 71 was the winner or whatever it ended up being,
right in there.
Yeah, he's like 71 or 72 or something like that. But yeah, absolutely insane.
And of course, he won again by landslide.
Yeah, I told you guys to vote for Joey Chestnut. So
you did. I just, one of these days, he's not going to win it. I don't know when that day is because that guy's just a machine when it comes to eating stuff.
Yeah, Kobayashi shakes in his boots at the thought.
Yeah, right.
Now, looking at this home run derby. One,
right.
Now, minus percentage based on Kalshi. So I've got two people that are leading the pack with a 23% chance to win it, and that is O'Neill Cruz and Cal Raleigh.
Yeah, Cal Raleigh's leading on William Hill. He is the clear-cut winner. But yeah, second place on this one's O'Neill Cruz.
So either one of these guys, O'Neill or Cal, on the Kalshi app,
I have both
right
those
now,
guys in my fantasy baseball too, by the way.
Well, those would be the two guys to have.
I know, I love it.
right now, both those guys are 1-4 odds. So in other words, if you put $100 on Cal Raleigh and he wins it, you win $412. Same exact thing for O'Neill Cruz on the Kalshi app. $100 turns into $412.
Yours is better than mine. Mine's 3-1 for Cal.
Yeah, see, now if you bet against him, it's a lot less. I mean, you can say he's not going to do it, and you'll win $126 off $100 bet. Jeez.
Now you've got, what, eight guys? Yeah, you got eight guys in the Home Run Derby. Was your next one James Wood? Not the actor, James Wood.
Hold on, I got to get back to it.
So mine breaks it down. So it's 3-8, 3-8 plus.
Yeah, James Wood is 19%. So if he wins it, it turns $100 into $500.
Okay,
so he's 5-1 on that. Then the next one, they all drop pretty significantly.
To
9%, 9%, 9%. The worst one on here is Jazz Chisholm at 4%.
Correct. Yeah,
which, again, $100 turns into $1,800, you bet.
And you never know, because these are just home run derby balls. So, because in real life, Jazz Chisholm is not, he's a speedster runner, get on base guy, but you never know when they're launching them. But
yeah,
to recap it for the bettors world, you got Cal Raleigh and O'Neill Cruz. We talked about James Wood is your third. Your fourth guy, Matt Olson, at least on mine, is an $850 deal. So you bet, $2, you'll win 17. Little guy stuff. And then you got Brent Rooker, Byron Buxton, Junior Caminero, and then Jazz Chisholm. Yeah, Jazz Chisholm, clearly, if you want to win some money, if he was to pull off an upset of upsets.
Yeah.
That's your home run derby. That's tonight. Me, again, I'm a Mariner fan, so but there's not a lot of money to win on Cal, but I'm sure hoping he pulls it off. He's obviously leading the league right now. But from a betting standpoint, I think it's worth it if you jump into that fourth, fifth, and sixth guys. Anything there, you bet $5, you're winning some decent money. Otherwise, yeah, you're just heavy favorites.
My next bet on Kalshi here, it's a stupid one because these are the fun ones.
Okay.
You've got the Ultimate Frisbee Championship coming up, and you can bet on who you think will make it through the qualifiers. Right now, at the very top of the list, we've got Atlanta Hustle with 2-1 odds, Chicago Union as well at 2-1 odds, Boston Glory. But if you really want to test your luck, pretty much most of these teams, except for those top seven,
Ultimate Frisbee, huh?
Are all -1% to win. If you like Ultimate Frisbee and you're somehow, not just some 20-year-old in college, you should probably start betting on this stuff.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about Ultimate. It's like football with Frisbee. I mean, it's not like Frisbee golf or nothing, so I'm not an expert. I can see that being a college thing all the way.
Oh, yeah. It's like hacky sacks or whatever for those kids.
Right. So I'm going to go Boston. I'll go Boston simply because that's who I would have taken, just because I can picture them playing at Boston Common Park and stuff.
I'm going to say Boston Glory right now, $100 will turn into $225, and there's two teams that will make it to the qualifier, so you're looking at one of the two teams to make it. Boston Glory currently third in line on the Kalshi projections here.
Okay. All right. I think Boston and Chicago. I think that's
what we're going. That's fair.
Yeah. On your home run derby, by the way, who's your choice? Just so we can circle back to this when we go next week.
I'll go Cal Raleigh.
You're going to go Cal. Okay. So you're going to go Cal. I'm going to stick my neck out a little bit. I'm going to go Matt Olson. I want Cal. Don't get me wrong. But from a betting standpoint, I'll stick my money out there for Matt and see if I can turn around some bucks. I'll bet on that too, by the way.
All right.
Okay, I got another one for you.
Yes.
The game itself. The game itself, the All-Star game is tomorrow. Any ideas who the favorite is?
No.
National League is favored to win that game a little bit. And the over-under, what do you think the over and under for an All-Star game? Now, mind you, got All-Star pitchers too. That's why. So what's the over-under? What would you predict is the over-under for total runs scored in that game between the two teams?
It'll be higher. I'll say total runs between both teams, I'm going to say 25.
No, for baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seven.
Oh, really?
Yep. Seven.
I was thinking this was primarily an offensive.
No, they come at it. These. It's not like the NFL to where they want to see the show. No, the pitchers are coming to pitch.
Okay.
And so, no, that's seven. They think this is going to be, which I would go over. I think it's going to be way over
that. I would say that too.
You know, but there are good pitchers in the game right now. So, you know, that's probably what they're looking at.
Yeah, they want to throw their pitchers out there for kind of
this. And they don't go more than an inning. Usually it's one inning.
I don't know if I'd want to risk somebody. Right. Especially if we're doing a good, you know.
You'll see some managers play their, you know, their top dog for the two innings. But here's the other problem. You got managers trying to get like a dozen pitchers into a game. So you'll get, okay, you're going to face two lefties. You're going to face one righty. I mean, so, you know, what tends to happen is, you know, they try to get all of them in there. So these guys are only coming in and they can use every bit of their arm for the one guy they're going to face.
No, that's fair.
Yeah.
All right. My last bet here, another stupid one. Best athlete for the Men's Sports Awards at the ESPYs this year.
I like that one, actually.
So there are four candidates.
Yeah, you can tell us the four?
Yeah, so you can also vote for a tie, too, which I don't know how often that happens, but it's it's less than 1% chance of happening, so yeah, don't count on a tie.
No.
We'll go in order of most popular. So number one at 68% is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, which that's obvious. Number two, Saquon Barkley. Yeah, that's fine, at 25%. Number three, Shohei Ohtani at 12%. And number four from the NFL is Josh Allen, but he is at less than a percent. So $100 turns into $1,000 if Josh Allen is named the men's sports winner at the, or the best athlete for men's at the ESPYs.
Okay. I know who mine is.
I mean, yeah, I would go with the odds here and just go with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And I feel like there's a lot of recency bias with this because they're doing it obviously so quickly after the finals to where, yeah, I suppose Shohei Ohtani could probably make a case for why he would be more important. But yeah, Josh Allen and Saquon, they're a little old news at this point. I mean,
but I'm going to go Saquon. And the only, and I agree with you, I think the timing is going to hurt football because the way these land, it's popularity at times. But I do think, I mean, the year he had and the fact that they got the icing on the cake by winning the whole thing, I just know for a guy that people, I don't want to say we're writing him off because everybody knew he was talented, but a position that, at his age, just doesn't seem to be able to hold tight, and he's still playing up to that level. I got it. I'm going to go on record thinking it's Saquon.
Well, that is 3-1 odds. $100 turns into $317. Shai Gilgeous turns $100 into $143, so it's not phenomenal.
Well, like you said, you're probably right. He's coming on the heels of the most recent sport.
Yeah.
But no, and he is the best player on that team, without question.
Yeah, no, without question.
Yep.
But yeah, that is that's my third bet.
Okay, then. I like it. I like it. So we got a few. I got to tell you, I did get mortified on a bet. Speaking of that, ones that just ended right before the show. So you know how I like to bet on some golfers, just because you get 4 days of watching.
Yeah,
they had the Scottish Open. Bet on a few players. One of them I bet on was Rory. I'm like, I like Rory McIlroy. I figured, why not? His odds were like 7-1. So I'm like, cool. I put down $10, right? So I'd win $70 just for fun. Well, first couple of rounds, he went from like 19th. Round two, he got up to like 11th, leapfrogged in round three from 11th to tied first. I'm thinking, cool, I got it. And then he lost.
Who do you lose to?
Nobody. I mean, well, I hate to say nobody, but nobody in the big, big betting world.
None of the three golf people that everybody knows.
Correct. I mean, and it was a bummer too, because I mean, he was the heavy favorite because, you know, he worked that hard to get back in the game. And I'm thinking first place, he's the best player out there in terms of on the course at the time. And no, they ended up getting him and he lost. It was such a bummer because I was already counting my, you know, the leagues give you that option to buy out. And I had it. It was a buyout at like $60, $50.
Oh, I should have done it.
I blew it. I just was like, no, I'm going to ride this. I know what I'm doing. And so I want to believe that I know what I'm doing. But no, Tommy lost to the great. This will be great, son. His name, total name, Chris Gutterup.
Oh, yeah.
You remember Chris Gutterup?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He worked at the putt-putt.
Yeah. Right. And that's who he lost to. And he came in second place. So, Rory, what are you doing to me, man? I guess now, unfortunately, I was all in on that for the weekend. That was how I spent my $20 on my William Hill account. So I have to go ahead and deposit money if I'm going to bet on baseball today.
You fool.
I know. I shouldn't have done it.
All right, everybody. We want to thank you again for listening to another episode of Generational Talent. If you're a sports friend fan, tell your friends about us. We need more listeners. We always need more listeners. We're trying to be, you know, the next Pat McAfee, but in less good shape. All right. We'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks.